Before we start this episode, we have a quick message from our sponsors.
If you're studying for the Foreign Service Officer test like us, we have a great study tool for you.
Besides listening to our podcast, we also use FSO Compass.
On FSO Compass, you can find practice tests for every section, comprehensive courses that guide you through the entire application process, and you can even connect with other aspiring U.S. diplomats.
The resources have really helped us prepare, and we hope they help you too. To access FSO Compass and get 10% off your annual subscription, be sure to use the link in our description box.
Good luck! Okay, right. So last but definitely not least is the Philippines. When the Treaty of Paris is signed, Spain transfers sovereignty over the Philippines to the U.S. for $20 million. So basically the U.S. pays $20 million for control over the Philippines.
Okay. I literally reacted like, oh my gosh, $20 million? That's so expensive. But it's a country.
For an entire country. And I don't know what that is in today's money. That's like $20 million in 1898. Yeah, they just buy the Philippines, which is, and so Filipino insurgents who had fought against Spanish rule soon had to turn their guns to a new occupier. So, like, from the beginning of U.S. involvement in the Philippines, U.S. presidential administrations had assumed that the Philippines would eventually be granted full independence, and they kind of just considered their role on the island to be one of, like, preparing Filipinos to govern themselves through American-style democracy. However, U.S. involvement in the Philippines would last almost 50 years. So obviously it lasted a lot longer than anyone had expected. And just like a side note, I don't think I would put good money on the fact that, like, most Americans don't know that the Philippines used to be a U.S. colony. Like,
I did not know till last year, and I don't remember how I learned that. I think I watched a video on, like, why do we have so many Filipino nurses? It was by Vox.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then I realized, that's when I found out that, oh, we actually owned the Philippines for some time.
I think I learned about it last year, too, which is so sad because, like, I literally studied international relations. Like, I have a degree in that, and then I still did not know. I graduated college, and I still did not know that, like, the Philippines was a U.S. colony. So, I don't know if that says anything about education or, like, me, but but I was reading the book How to Hide an Empire by Daniel Immerwahr. I'm pretty sure I mispronounced that. I'm sorry. It's an excellent book. I think everyone should read it. I think all Americans should be required to read it, because not only does it go through, like, the history of U.S. imperialism, it also talks about why, like, Americans don't know anything about it today. So, yeah. So, anyway, the Philippines used to be a U.S. colony. So the Spanish-American War ends, and then the Philippine-American War quickly begins immediately after. So the Philippine-American War lasts from February 1899 to 1902. And actually, 10 times more American troops died suppressing the revolts in the Philippines than compared to, like, the number of troops that died defeating Spain. So does that make sense? Like, so we, like, so many more lives were lost trying to maintain this colony rather than, like, fighting to gain it. So that's interesting. So before the Spanish-American War had even ended, on June 12th, 1898, Filipinos declared independence from Spain, and they proclaimed, like, a provisional republic, and they chose General Emilio Aguinaldo as their president. That government had seized control over most of the Philippines' main island of Luzon. I hope I'm saying that right. And, yeah, they established the Philippine Republic. But then the U.S. comes and they defeat Spain, and the U.S. gains control over Manila by mid-August of 1898. However, like, Filipino insurgents control the rest of the country, because if you've ever seen a map of the Philippines, it's just a bunch of islands. So, again, like, that's really hard to seize control over, like, an island, like, an archipelagic country like that.
And also just get the word out, too, with who controls what.
Literally, like, during this time, it must be so confusing to Filipinos. Like, just, you have so many different forces in the country. And so, on February 4th, 1899, shooting erupts on the outskirts of Manila. And so, while this fighting is in progress, General Aguinaldo declares war against the U.S. The Filipinos were quickly defeated by U.S. forces. And the existence of Aguinaldo's government is pretty much completely ignored by the U.S. And even though the U.S. wasn't able to completely destroy Aguinaldo's government, they declare the rebellion officially over in November 1899. And the U.S. starts to just set up their own military commander and governor of the Philippines. So they're like, if we just ignore the problem, maybe it'll go away, I guess. I don't know why. Okay. Like, so while this is happening, while the U.S. is setting up their own little government in Manila, the Filipino insurgents flee, and their government, they flee north. And so there's basically, like, two phases of this war. So the first phase of the Philippine-American War is at the beginning, when General Aguinaldo tries to fight, like, a standard, like, war against the U.S., but he was really ill-equipped and unprepared. And so that's when they all, like, flee. U.S. captures Manila, they flee north. And then after this is when the war takes a turn, and the Filipino insurgents switch to guerrilla warfare, which is a lot less conventional, and rather, like, instead of just, like, what you think of, like, standard warfare, like, the 1800s, you know?
Yeah.
So the U.S. wasn't able to set up, like, a proper functioning and effective, stable government in Manila because they're so busy fighting Filipino guerrillas, like, all across the archipelago. The problem with guerrilla warfare, so basically guerrilla warfare, like, you could think of it as, like, surprise attacks by people who are in civilian clothing, and they're, like, hiding, they're using terrain to their advantage. Their environment to their advantage. The con of this is that the enemy doesn't, like, the U.S. doesn't know who their enemy is, you know? It, like, we see this in Vietnam with guerrilla warfare. They're like, I don't know who's a soldier and who's just a civilian. Yeah, so basically the U.S. is like, well, now we don't know who we can trust. So this leads to a retaliation campaign, including massacres, torture, burning of villages, and isolating what's called zones of protection, which is just another word for internment camps. So, like, in some cases, they would literally just, like, blockade an entire town, an entire village, and they would just, like, starve them out until people would, like, confess who are the rebels.
Starve them?
Yeah. What? Starve them out. They would torture them and be like, all right, like, you have to give us, like, all your information. You have to give us your plans. Let us know, like, who the rebels are. Yeah. And it, and the whole entire town, like, would just be stuck. It would just become an internment camp. Like, it was awful.
Whoa. How did we not know that? Yeah. Why did no one tell us this?
Yeah. Whoa. There's so many, like, atrocities that were committed in the Philippines, especially if people want, I don't have, again, like, I don't have enough time to go into everything. You can read more about it in How to Hide an Empire. There's, like, so much that's covered. But, like, one other just side note that people might want to research is U.S. treatment of Moro Filipinos. So there's, like, a group of Muslim Filipinos called the Moros. We, like, basically just rounded up, like, 1,000 of them, brought them to this, like, extinct volcano, and just, like, massacred them. Yeah, so...
What?
Yeah, so it gets really bad. Yeah,
Why did we do that? What?
Because it, I guess that's how we thought, like, we're going to gain control over the country and just...
Yeah,
that's what happens in imperialism, but... So Filipino, okay, I guess to, like, show the other side, like, Filipino fighters also, like, tortured, captured American soldiers, and they terrorized civilians who were cooperating with American forces. So, like, if there were certain villages that were, like, helping the U.S., then the Filipino insurgents would come and, like, burn down the village, too. So, it's, like, war is... awful and
terrible,
brutal.
Terrible.
And yeah, so obviously the U.S. had undeniable military advantages compared to the Philippines. The U.S. Mm-hmm. had trained fighting forces, they had a steady supply of military equipment, and they gained control over the archipelago's waterways. So, like, they controlled all the water routes. And then the Filipinos had many disadvantages. They were unable to gain outside support for their cause, so they were pretty much on their own. They just had a chronic shortage of weapons and ammunition. Like, the problem was that, like, they would have guns, they're really old guns, but then they just didn't have any bullets, and so they were, like, trying to make their own bullets. Sometimes they would just be fighting with, like, knives. And again, like, people of all ages are fighting, especially that's, like, in guerrilla warfare, a lot of time, like, children are recruited, so they would just have, like, they would send, like, kids first with, like, knives and, like, improper weapons. Yeah, it's, like, really, it's really depressing.
This is horrible.
I know, sorry. It's, like, yeah.
I'm physically feeling, like, sad.
Yeah.
Physically feeling, starting to feel, like,
just
so sad with the whole thing.
Yeah, it's really awful, and I will, like, say, like, the book How to Fight an Empire obviously goes into more detail, but just a warning, like, the details are a lot more graphic and disturbing, but, I mean, it's what happened, like, it's the truth, it's history, yeah. So it's important to learn about it, but, yeah, it is really upsetting to learn about, but, and back in the U.S., there's a lot of division over, like, whether or not the U.S. should be fighting this war in the Philippines. There are a lot of anti-war supporters, including Mark Twain, Jane Addams, and Andrew Carnegie. However, I will say, like, before you're like, oh, yay, like, Americans are, like, standing up for the Filipinos. Basically, you have, like, your pro-war supporters and your anti-war supporters. But then the anti-war supporters are divided into two groups, basically. The first group of anti-war supporters are, like, yes, like, this war is morally wrong, and, like, we don't want the U.S. to become an imperialistic nation, like, we don't want colonies overseas. Then the second half is, like, we don't want to fight this war in the Philippines because we don't want the Philippines to be a U.S. territory, but only because they're non-whites. Like, we don't want non-whites to be part of the U.S. empire. So, again, you're like, oh, okay.
So it's really just, like, a very tiny group of ethical Americans,
So even the anti-war supporters, it's not just like, oh, yay, like, you have good morals. No, it's just like, we don't want non-whites.
That checks out for the time period.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So in March 1900, President McKinley convened the Second Philippine Commission in order to create a civilian government for the Philippines. So they want to transition from a military government to a civilian government. They're trying to, like, de-escalate conflict in the archipelago. And so William Howard Taft became civil governor in 1901, and he would later become U.S. president. So that's kind of wild that, like, a U.S. president was, like, a governor in the Philippines territory. But on March 23rd, 1901, General Emilio Aguinaldo is captured by U.S. forces, and the insurrection is ended. So the Philippine-American War comes to an end. So casualties, 20,000 Filipino combatants were killed, and 200,000 civilians died as a result of combat, cholera and malaria epidemics, and food shortages caused by several agricultural catastrophes. So that's a huge number, like 200,000 people were lost. And 4,300 Americans were killed in the Philippines. 1,500 Americans were killed in combat, while the rest were actually killed from disease because they were not used to, like, the climate. So then the Philippine-American War is over. The Philippines is still an American colony.
So when does the Philippines eventually become independent?
So that's a great question, Jack. That's a perfect transition to the next part. So in 1916, Woodrow Wilson is president, and he starts to turn over some authority to Filipino leaders. This kind of begins the process of granting, like, more and more self-governance to the Philippines. Like, they're allowed to form a Senate, and then, like, slowly they're gaining more, like, autonomy over the next, like, couple decades. But then all of this is put on hold during World War II, because during World War II, Japan occupies the Philippines. So another occupying force enters. And so the U.S. So I'm going to focus now on the Battle for Manila, which happens in February 1945. So Manila was considered one of the most beautiful cities in the entire world. Unfortunately, it was completely destroyed in a single month. So from 1941 to 1945, the Philippines had been overrun by Japanese forces. And, like, if you know anything about, like, Japan, World War II, basically they had occupied, like, all of Southeast Asia. But in other countries in Southeast Asia, it was pretty much, like, Japan fighting, like, the inhabitants of that country, like, the citizens of that country. The Philippines was really the only Southeast Asian country where Japanese and Allied forces were colliding. We had, like, U.S. troops in the Philippines. So it wasn't just like, oh, Japan is, like, trying to fight Filipinos. It was like, okay, we're fighting Filipinos and American troops. And so in this battle, like, the entire city of Manila is just bombed and, like, destroyed, like, turned into rubble, which is really sad. An estimated 100,000 Filipino citizens die in this battle, which in all of World War II, only the battles of Berlin and Stalingrad resulted in more civilian casualties. So this is, like, a huge battle between the Japanese and then U.S. Filipino troops. And so obviously Japan surrenders at the end of World War II. And after this, I guess at this point, so we were, like, fighting the Japanese so hard in the Philippines because we're like, well, this is our territory. But then after this, we're kind of like, you know what? Like, maybe overseas territories are more of a liability than a benefit, you know? On July 4th, 1946, the U.S. and the Philippines signed the Treaty of Manila, which officially grants full independence to the Philippines. So after World War II, we're like, okay, we're actually, like, this time it's for real. You guys can be independent. So their long and bloody struggle for independence from at first Spain, then the U.S., and then later Japan left Filipinos with a strong sense of national identity through their shared experiences and beliefs. People came to consider themselves Filipinos first and only. And obviously, American occupation left, like, so many long-lasting effects. The impact of American occupation is, like, still the effects of jeez Louise. The effects of American occupation is, like, still seen today in the Philippines. We left so many, like, long-lasting effects. So Filipino historians argue that American colonial policies supported traditional elites and feudal social relations that continue to form the basis of today's oligarchy. So if you know anything about, like, Filipino politics, there is definitely lots of corruption in the Philippines today, and a lot of people see that stem from how the U.S. set up its own government in the Philippines, mm-hmm. and then how they aided later, like when they're granting all this autonomy to the Philippines and like helping them set up their own governments. I think it definitely mm-hmm. kind of helped with like create this oligarchy that still okay. lasted today. And just like a lot of people, like historians who look back on the Philippine-American War, kind of what we were saying earlier, like they think that Aguinaldo, General Aguinaldo's attempts to fight a conventional war in the first few months, like led to his defeat. They were pretty much like, because right at the beginning, they suffer severe losses in men and material, and then they switched to guerrilla tactics later, but it might have been more effective if they had just started using guerrilla warfare from the beginning. Okay, so just to wrap up this long episode, the impact of the Spanish-American War. So, like, from where it's, like, kind of go back because we derailed a little bit, but the Spanish-American War is obviously an important turning point for both Spain and the U.S. So Spain's defeat turns the nation's attention away from its overseas colonies towards its domestic needs. And this actually leads to both a cultural and literary renaissance and two decades of much-needed economic development in Spain. So they were like, you know what? Yeah, we should kind of figure out what's going on back home. and then the U.S. emerges from the Spanish-American War as a world power with overseas possessions. They're an imperial power. And they have a new stake in international politics. Secretary of State John Hay called the Spanish-American War a, quote, splendid little war, unquote. And so, like, Americans were just like, oh, look at, we defeated Spain, like, this colonial power. We defeated them so easily. Like, we had a huge ego boost after this war, which is, like, that's kind of why we would later play a determining role in the affairs of Europe and the rest of the world.
We really come a long way since the War of 1812.
Yes, yes. Oh, my gosh. It's wild.
Wow.
The McKinley administration uses the Spanish-American War as a pretext for the annexation of Hawaii, because that had been, that had been, at first Grover Cleveland, in 1893, he rejected requests from, like, businessmen in Hawaii. They were like, make it a state, because it's all, like, white businessmen in Hawaii that, like, overtook the island. And then Grover Cleveland was like, no, I don't know if that's, like, constitutional. And then later, McKinley, on August 12th, 1898, Congress makes Hawaii a U.S. territory.
Wow,
and it was because of, like, our success in the Spanish-American War and all of our territorial acquisitions.
Yeah, yeah, we're like, let's give this imperialism a try.
Yeah, they're like, man, this is nice.
Yay.
Dang. But yeah, so that's the Spanish-American War. Finally, so many things happened. Nah. From this tiny little war, like, so many things came from it. And again, I didn't even talk about Cuba. That's for another time. We're just going to keep dragging you though.
Yeah, I feel like we just dabbled. Wow. I think you did a great job. I know we waited a year for it, but I feel like it was really worth the wait. You did a fantastic job on research. I loved the pacing. I loved how you organized it. Just overall, probably one of my favorite episodes, this Beat Out the Rasputin episode, which I love that episode too.
Oh my gosh. That was a fun one. This one is just like, I don't know. It's just so crazy. And I really don't know, like, how did we not know that? Like, this is such an important event for so many places all around the world. Right. And, like, again, like, when you talk about, like, things that are on the news today, like, Puerto Rican statehood, even, like, Guamanian independence, like, that all stems from this. And so,
it's wild. Wow. Incredible.
Yeah, yay. Yeah. So, season 3, we're coming in strong. I'm so excited for all the topics we're going to cover. So, please, everyone, stay tuned. We're so happy to be back. And yeah, I guess we'll see you all in the next episode. Bye. This has been an episode of How Did We Not Know That?
If you liked it, don't forget to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
You can also follow us on all social media at HDWNKT and subscribe to our YouTube channel.
Also, check out our website at hdwnkt.com to find all of our show notes and study guides for each episode.
You can help us improve the quality of the podcast by becoming a history hero through our Patreon.
Thank you for listening and see you guys next week.